Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Paddock Project. I am joined by the one and only Ellen Jones, F1's very first head of ESG, formerly head of sustainability. Ellen, from leading the charge around F1's road to net zero, to the impact report, to launching all sorts of initiatives around the next generation of talent, spearheading calendar regionalization, the list goes on and on and on. I'm honored to chat today. Thank you, first of all, for everything you're doing for this sport that we all love, and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. That was a brilliant introduction. Very appreciated.
I've just been following your journey for many years, so it's very exciting to be able to finally chat. And maybe just to level set for our listeners, first off, if you could just give a brief description of sort of your role in your own words, like what are your main responsibilities at F1 and what does ESG mean in the sport?
Yes. So when I started at Formula One, as you said, I was the first head of sustainability here. And my job was to deliver our sustainability strategy. So how do we have our carbon emissions? How do we host more sustainable events? How do we build a more diverse and inclusive sport? And really what it is how do you take strategic ideas and start to implement them into everyday actions, into everyone's role, so that when we talk about the big things that we're going to deliver, it's actually made up as not something that was bolted on in a silo, but that sustainability, performance being driven through all of these activities is just part of the definition of what good looks like. It's part of the definition of Formula One bringing performance to all areas of what we do.
Yeah, 100%. That's a great way to put it. And I imagine it's a challenge because you're working at the Formula One level, but you also have the FIA and then you have these 10 teams. And so coordinating those goals across all the different parties must be challenging. I'm curious how you've found that over the years and if it's gotten easier or what that's been like.
So I was new to the F1 village, if you will. I didn't have a previous background in motorsport. Also, I was new to the world of sport itself and broadcasting. My background is in food and beverage. And so the list of stakeholders involved in sport and the way that sport works is totally different from many industries. And you named a few, our regulator, the FIA, our 10 teams, but you also have our broadcasters, you have our suppliers, you have our race promoters, you have our commercial partners, and many other stakeholders in the sport who help make what we do possible. And that is both an opportunity because we can do things that are not standard. We can create a new rule book, so to speak, and really test ideas quickly because that's part of the DNA of Formula One. Mm. But equally, you have to be very astute to make sure you're not just talking, you're taking action and that you can bring in all these ideas, but then pick the ones that are really core to your strategy and your deliverables because we do have a wealth of opportunity. And it's how you turn all of those opportunities or the right opportunities into action today.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. So you're saying you came from food and beverage. I'm curious what landed you in this crazy world of Formula One.
So I've always loved sports. I've always been massively competitive, even over little things like, you know, who can get to that door faster? I'd be like, yes, I'm in for this. it's just, whether it's playing sports, watching sports, it's just something that I really love and enjoy as part of my life. And then when this opportunity came up, I was like, oh, wow, well, my professional life is looking at sustainability. It's looking holistically at these system changes, whether it's in logistics, whether it's in our supply chain, whether it's how we actually look at hosting and generosity through the lens of sustainability, which is really critical in food and beverage, but also critical to the world of F1, where hospitality and having fun is really part of what we do. And so for me, it was a real kind of opportunistic timing of, you know, in my personal life, I love sport, really engaged in F1 and pretty much anything that I can make competitive. But then also, you know, my professional background and sport at this time and Formula One. So I started in Jan 22. And there really was this class of 22 where a number of individuals, most of my counterparts, come from other industries into F1, into sport. And because of that, we have a really rich dialogue of what's worked in other places, what works in other contexts, which applies to F1 because we are such a global organization, and we really need to understand how we can work best with our local stakeholders, bring in their best practice, but then also apply, you know, strategic insights at an F1 level. And so that's been a really rich space, because you probably know this, but sustainability professionals, we like to share our solutions. We don't want to reinvent the wheel, pardon the pun. And so it's great to be able to have that cross-pollination across industry.
Totally. I mean, that's been one of my favorite things talking to a lot of the sustainability professionals in the sport, is just how it's very cooperative and collaborative, it seems. Like, it's not something you should be competing on team to team. Like, it's sort of a rising tide lifts all boats. And I love hearing that you take inspiration from other industries and other organizations as well, because, you know, Formula One is certainly unique, but there are a lot of lessons you can pull from a lot of different places. I want to hit the sort of different prongs of ESG, maybe starting with social, because I was just in Austin, and one of the big headlines last week that's top of mind that I think hits on a lot of your role and what you've sort of been talking about is the local startup Girl Start, who helps girls get into STEM. They just won the F1 All-Win Global Community Award. And I personally hold Girl Start very near and dear to my heart. I've interviewed the founder, Shane, and spent a couple Grand Prix ago a day with the girls, like helping them build their robot cars with McLaren. But tell me a little bit about sort of the social strategy, that award, why it's important, and what the thinking behind all of that is.
Absolutely. And I think picking up on your point in terms of Girl Start being part of the F1 community for a long time, and the F1 community, whether it's our teams, whether it's our race promoters, that's just really wonderful to see that continuity and what they can help in their local community, and how when F1 comes to town, that can inspire someone on their next career trajectory. But taking that a step back to how did we get here, is when you look at how does Formula One build a more diverse and inclusive sport. What that means is, how do we work with our local communities? How do we inspire the next generation? Because you can't have the next generation of engineering solutions without the next generation of engineers. It sometimes is that simple. And when you look at the pipeline, there are some stats, and I think Girl Start has mentioned them as well, because I listened to your podcast in preparation. Which was really lovely to hear, because there's really strong themes and points, which are still statistics today, which is about many young women and young girls self-select out of STEM, because there isn't that connection into, is this a career for me because I can see role models? Is this a career for me because I understand that the topics that I'm interested in actually could lead me to a STEM career? And so that inspiration point is really critical to ensure that young women particularly do not self-select out of science, technology, engineering, mathematics topics. And so when we do that, there's a number of programs that we run, whether it's at the primary, secondary, or tertiary level of education. But specific to this award is the F1 All-Win Global Community Award. And the inception of this really comes from partnerships. And what we talked about earlier is, what can we uniquely do as a sport to contribute that we can uniquely do because of our relationships? And with Alwyn and their focus on supporting communities, and with F1, with our outreach to communities, and specifically the relationship with our race promoters, who are the hosts of our events and who work in the communities year round, this award came together to say, how do we say thank you, really, and reach out to these local initiatives who are helping support the next generation? And that's why Girl Start made a fantastic winner as our first US winner of the F1 All-Win Community Award, because they not only help inspire the next generation, but they also do it really specifically to Austin and specifically for young women and young girls, which all supports the sport as well as our community around us.
I love that so much. Yeah, I love the local kind of community nature of it, especially. And if I'm not wrong, you all are going to announce other winners in Mexico and Vegas. Is that right?
Yes.
At the end of the season? Amazing.
Yes. Well, so there's four awards this year.
Very excited to see what that's like. But yeah, that's one of my favorite things about the sport, is how just local it is to all the communities that it races in. And that's very unique because a lot of sports, not in necessarily a bad way, but it's like, you know, you go to a stadium here, you go to a stadium there, it can sort of be copy paste in a different way. And I think F1 just is so unique in that it really showcases the cultures and the histories and the communities and the places that it races in. But I imagine that's also difficult in ways because you're constantly having, not necessarily to reinvent the wheel, but you're working with different promoters, you're working with different governments. Like, is rallying people around that difficult with a 24 race calendar, or have you found that to be inspiring?
So when you look at F1, our events are the kind of window to our sport, whether you're some of the hundreds of thousands of fans coming through the gates on the weekend or part of the many more fans watching on broadcast. You're absolutely right. When you see the event, you get welcomed into the world of the sport, but also get to understand the world where we race. And so hosting more sustainable events and leaving that positive legacy in the community is something that we strategically want to deliver on and continue to improve and deliver on. And so when I started in 22, that race promoters, who are our event hosts, were my first stakeholder group, actually, that we really wanted to work with to understand, one, where is there expertise that we can learn from and share best practice across our stakeholders of race promoters? But then two, how can we create common outcomes across the sport? So rather than saying the how of you must do this in this specific way, we actually set outcomes like we want you to power your event increasingly by renewable energy. We want you to ensure every fan has a greener way to get to the race. And what that means is that then the race promoters can come up with solutions that are specific to their local context, whether that is working with local charities like Girls Start to help open up access to the sport, whether that is looking at food donation, circularity, working with local charities, so that it really is effective in that community and is something that stays year round. And so from, you know, an ESG sustainability perspective, that's one of the areas that I'm incredibly proud of, because we started these conversations with our promoters. We've learned so much in both directions, and we now have this really consistent delivery of raising the standard in terms of our events and how we interact with our communities, how we interact with our environment. And that standard will continue to rise because we've built in that capability, that stakeholder engagement, so that we can continue to deliver across this space.
Yeah, makes so much sense. And maybe double clicking into the sort of environmental part of ESG, because we're talking a little bit more about sustainability. The 2026 regulations are fast approaching. Like, we're almost there, which is crazy to think about, but they have sustainability at their core in many ways, you know, 100% sustainable fuel, 50-50 hybrid engines, more calendar regionalization, all of that. How is getting that across the finish line, and what are you excited for kind of in this next era?
So advanced sustainable fuel, which is a fuel that it has a lower greenhouse gas emissions because it is not made from fossil fuels. It's over 99% advanced sustainable components, which has a very long definition aligned to RED III in the EU legislation, should anyone like to go down that rabbit hole. But the key thing about it is that it helps us showcase new technologies that can help the world decarbonize. You talked about F1 as a research and development lab. Having the research and development power of F1 onto solutions that are road relevant is an amazing space to be. And 50% of the power next year will be coming from the battery and the electric side of the F1 car. Formula One cars are already some of the most efficient hybrid engines in the world. But I think moving up to 50% will help people understand that story and understand that development from that side of the power unit regulations. But then the advanced sustainable fuel, which is already working in our F2, F3 cars as of last season. And it's already one of the key components about it is that it's a drop-in fuel. So it can be mixed with standardized fuels so that in our safety and medical car last year, they were at a 40% blend with its advanced sustainable fuel. And why that matters is because when you come up with new sustainability solutions, it's very rare that you then have it available 100% of the places, you need to be able to scale and mix it in with current solutions. So that drop-in capability and ability to mix with other fuels is really critical so that we can showcase what development could look like when you talk about scaling solutions that help us all decarbonize, whether we're on track or off.
I mean, that's the beauty of F1 is that there are a lot of OEMs involved. And so they have a Formula One division where they're working on a lot of this sort of in that R&D lab capacity. But then there's also the ability for that to extend much broader and be more road relevant, which I think is so unique to F1 and just such a testament for how the sport can do better for the world and still be entertainment. Like, I think what I'm really excited for is that, yes, these regulations are way more sustainable, but I think the on-track action is going to be hopefully just as good. And it's going to be a blank slate next year, which I am so excited for. So
I think it will create an incredibly exciting, any regulation change, you know, mixes up the grid and will be really exciting to see how that comes to play. But I think you hit the nail on the head there. You know, when we made this change in F2 and F3, no one noticed. And that's actually a sign of success. And because we've been able to continue that on-track action, continue that amazing spectacle, but do it in a different way, help technology show that we can reduce our carbon emissions while still coming together and being able to celebrate great events like F1. And when you talk about the technology itself, while as a viewer, we shouldn't see any difference with the cars going on track, but as a platform for F1 to say there are solutions that work in this space, we use them, you can use them too, which is something that we do a lot in our logistics framework. That really matters, and that helps us expand what we can do and what people think is possible.
Yeah, it's really great to see. And I know I mentioned calendar regionalization a couple of times. It seems like F1 has made a lot of progress over the past couple of years on that front. How difficult is it to shift races around? What are some of the considerations you have to think about when it comes to structuring the calendar to reduce carbon footprint and make those logistics a little bit greener?
So we've been making sequential changes to our calendar to rationalize it. And why that is important is because when you reduce the distance between point A and B, you reduce your carbon emissions. It's that simple. But in terms of how you do that, that was actually a very long process, which has been led by our race promotion team and just many conversations. Because when you look at our contracts, which seem to be getting longer and longer, those renewal periods are not often coming up. So you have to negotiate with your race promoters out of contractual cycles or wait for that contractual cycle to go around. You equally then have to take into account weather. You have to take into account national holidays. And you also have to take into account the fact that when you have hundreds of thousands of people coming to a site, you're really mobilizing the entire community, the entire city. And that is no mean feat to change because of all of the impact on the related services. And so it really has been I'm not going to say labor of love, but a labor of necessity that we've been working through to ensure that our calendar can be rationalized, that therefore lowers the distance flown in terms of that point A to point B distance, which is the route that our critical kit flies. Simultaneously, we also have been making other changes like moving freight to sea freight so it doesn't actually follow the calendar, lowering your carbon emissions, and also investing in our remote broadcast so people and kit don't have to travel when we're able to use those facilities in Kent, which are amazing should you ever get to visit.
Yes, hopefully. Fingers crossed. That's on the bucket list.
It's a really cool space. And it also helps us reduce our carbon footprint, but have such a high quality output each weekend for the world feed on our broadcast.
Yeah, totally. Has the last F1 race got your stress levels through the roof? It might not be Ferrari's strategy or papaya rules. It might actually be your hormones. That's where Happy Mammoth comes in, the supplement that helps women maintain optimal hormone levels. Now you can take those results even further by pairing it with their prebiotic collagen protein, which helps restore gut lining integrity, promoting overall hormonal balance. It helps to relieve occasional bloating, reduce sugar cravings, help you feel satisfied longer, boost energy, and help stabilize mood swings. Because your gut directly affects your hormones, improving gut health can amplify your hormone harmony results so you can feel like yourself again. Right now, you can try prebiotic collagen protein and Hormone Harmony risk-free and get 15% off your entire order with code PADDOCKPROJECT at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use code PADDOCKPROJECT for 15% off today. I think I can only imagine the number of moving pieces it takes, A, to even put a race on, but B, to try and like switch that around and jigsaw it a bit in the calendar. So congratulations on all the effort and all the progress you all have made already, because I think it's been great to see and it's fun for the fans to see that come together. F1 has just been on this crazy growth trajectory. And I am in business school, I'm a business student. So I look at, you know, the business and the financials behind a lot of stuff. And F1 is just doing incredibly well and being incredibly successful. I'm curious how you think about balancing like impact and some of these ESG initiatives with business and profit goals. Like, is there any tension there? Or is that something that's very much built into the business and the ethos of how F1 operates?
I think first things first, to be in growth is a privilege. It's not a given. And that is part of, you know, business's strategies. That's part of the day in, day out delivery, the passion of the people who work for it. And so from an F1 perspective, it's wonderful to be part of it. And from my perspective personally, the second piece is, well, how do you incorporate ESG so it can be part of that delivery and sustainability? And one of the things that we were really thrilled to announce in our impact report this summer is that we can grow well. We can show that you can grow as a sport and reduce your carbon emissions because we're making so many material changes to how we operate. And the reason of why we can do that is not just budget that we put to it, which is an important part, but it's also because we are building sustainability and ESG considerations into the start of projects, into the start of what good performance looks like. And therefore, its business case stands up when it's part of performance as opposed to being an add-on at the end. And so really building that into sustainability as a core part of the definition of what does good look like to us has enabled us to grow well, which then enables us to do more fun projects like the F1 Alwyn Global Community Award.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's such a great answer. And I'm really excited to see how that continues. Maybe one final question before we just get into some very quick and easy rapid fire, but
rapid fire is never easy. Just put it out there.
Hopefully this version will be, but I get so many messages, mostly from younger women, about how to break into F1, how to break into STEM, how to get a job in the sport or even a foot in the door. And for someone like you, who is a woman in motorsport doing incredible things, would love just any advice from you to people who are trying to make that first step into this world.
So I think the first thing is you have to keep asking that question, honestly, to everyone you know, because everyone's going to give you a different facet, a different person to speak to, a different connection. And so really stay curious. Put your ambition out there, even in business. If you don't tell people what your strategy is, how can they help you deliver it? And you should take that for your own personal self and keep asking that question. I think the second piece is, and this can be particularly for young women, is we oftentimes self-select out. So in my own experience, I didn't actually have any connections. I didn't know anyone in the sport. And I applied. I just submitted my application and I went through all of the steps. And I know that that is lucky happenstance in that instance, but if you don't apply, you can never get into it. So looking at every opportunity, putting your hat in the ring, not going through every single line and say, I don't do everything perfect. Perfect is not what people are looking for. What we're looking for is people who are really interested in learning, have a passion for what they do, and then that shines through. How do you ask the right questions rather than coming in and saying, I have all the answers? Because no one has all the answers. And don't hold yourself to that level, because that's not even the level we're looking for. We want to be that inquisitive, continue to ask questions. So that would be my top advice. I'm sure there's so much more we could talk about though on that topic, because it's one I'm really passionate about. And I'm glad that it's something that Girl Start specifically is working on with young women And we could probably have a whole nother podcast on that.
100%. I think that's one of the best answers I've heard. And it's that classic Wayne Gretzky quote of, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. So just put yourself out there and keep asking the questions, and don't feel like you need to be 100% perfect, because no one is, and no one ever got a job because of that. So
no. And if someone came to me and said, I have all the answers, I'd be like, no, you don't.
That's actually not a red flag.
I don't have all the answers.
Yeah, no, I absolutely love Girl Start for that. I mean, I'm, as a STEM student and engineer myself, like just seeing them make those strides and open the doors and just show girls that it's possible is just, I think, so incredibly powerful. So cheers to them and to anyone else who is going to be soon winning this All-Win Global Community Award. But maybe super quickly, rapid fire. Favorite race, if you've been to one, and that may be hard to to say, but...
It's really hard to say. I'm not allowed to have favorites because I have to work with all the race promoters. If I say favorites, my phone is going to start ringing. It's the same with teams. So I hope that's not the second question.
No, I would never ask you your team loyalties because I assume that you are unbiased and objective.
Well, it's the same with my race promotion. I can't pick my favorite child.
Fair enough. Initiative you're most proud of?
So there's been a lot of initiatives that we've worked on that I think should fight for the crown. But the one that's top of mind today is looking at sustainable aviation fuel. Mm-hmm. We talked about how we move to advanced sustainable fuels on track, but how we do that for our logistics network is really critical because that's more than 2/3 of our carbon footprint from a material impact perspective. And we've been working for 2+ years trying to understand sustainable aviation fuel, how we can apply it to cargo networks, how we can ensure the teams can take part, how we can ensure it builds from our logistics provider to our partners to auditors. There's so many parts of that chain. And also, most importantly, how it doesn't become something that we trialed and didn't scale, but something that started at scale. So last year, we were able, so last year, 24 is the year I'm referring to. I think just under 20% of our charter emissions were covered by sustainable aviation fuel, and we're expecting to build on that. And so that's a project I'm really proud of.
Love that. I'm excited to follow that journey. And lastly, your hometown, and if you had one recommendation for someone visiting, whether that's a restaurant, a park, a museum, anything, what would it be?
So my hometown, the next town over, had one stoplight. So there isn't too much on the list. However, there is there's a bike and hike trail that goes through. And when we were kids, we would walk up the trail and we'd bring these inner tubes and then just do a lazy rafting down. And that is just really fun.
I love that
would be my best recommendation.
And what town?
For you.
What town is this?
It's called Moncton, Monkton.
Okay.
If it counts as a town.
To the list. That's amazing. Well, Ellen, thank you so much for joining. This has been an incredible conversation, and we're just in awe and very inspired by everything that you're doing for the sport. So can't thank you enough, and excited to see all the continued progress.
Thank you so much. Till next time.